Is there anything in the Indian way of life that makes it, the general culture that makes it difficult for an Indian to make it?
No. What I think is making it difficult for him to make it is this undisciplined society that he lives under the Indian Reorganization Act, and this whole theory of government paternalism. You see, there's no discipline now among the Indian people, either in their tribal government, in their family life, and in their everyday affairs. You know, in the old days, the Indians had the most drastic discipline you ever heard of. When someone did something that was reprehensible to the tribe or against their unwritten laws, this person wasn't only reprimanded, he was completely kicked out of the tribe. Absolute discipline. They brooked no violations of their laws. Like, for instance, if your wife had a baby too soon, against the prevailing rule in the tribe, you know, they had a rule that once you've had a baby, that you just don't have relations with your wife again for a great long period of time. And this was a good reason for this rule and everything. And if you violated it, they kicked you out.
All of this kind of discipline has broken down.
It's disappeared completely because we've become a nation of sycophants. You know what a sycophant is?
Right.
This is what we've become.
And this seems to be the way for the Indian today to get ahead is by being a boot kisser.
Right. A brown noser. A sycophant. A collaborator. In other words, there's been no reward for independent thinking. It's been a liability among the Indian people. Look at Crazy Horse. Look at Sitting Bull. They were absolutely cold, murdered in cold blood because they were independent thinkers. And, of course, through the years, this has been the rule. The Bureau officials don't point to your people who are independent. In fact, I imagine they have some very derogatory things to say about me. But I've made it on my own. I have taken advantage of the opportunities that have been available to me. I've gone out with no help from them and made myself a trial lawyer. With no help from them.
There seems to be now quite a little help available.
There are many opportunities. But you see, what's bothering the Indian is this idea that's been planted in his head that he's somehow incompetent to compete. And therefore, he needs a bureaucratic government to help him. He doesn't need this. This is hurting him.
Your objection to the Indian Bureau, then, is this is the word coddling?
Yes. And, of course, what the Bureau has done is they have completely maintained, jealously guarded, their prerogative to make all policy-making decisions. Indians have no part in this. They have no part in creative thinking to better the lot of themselves and their people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have many, many competent Indians that have left this system because it's frustrating. There's nothing you can do. In other words, the government has got to give the Indian the absolute determination of his own destiny.
What about the tribal lands and the individual lands held in trust? Would you abolish that?
No, I think that the Indian should maintain. This is a birthright, or whatever you want to call it. I think that the government, however, should contribute to some governmental organization, either the own Indian's county setup or municipal setup, an amount that would otherwise be received if these lands were taxed. So that they would use these funds and learn to get by on them to run their local county and city governments, and we would save millions of dollars that the government is spending every year, not to pay anything of any direct benefit to the Indians, but to pay these tremendous salaries to all these bureaucrats. This is where all this money goes, for administration.
It's all eaten up for administration.
Right. The Indian gets very little of it.
How do those Indians live? I mean, some of them obviously have jobs, but there are a lot of these, let's say, a full blood living up in Ring Thunder. How does he stay alive?
You'll hardly believe it. You can hardly believe it. He lives on practically nothing.
Well, I know he's nothing.
Some of them get some of them get varying amounts of lease money from lands that are leased out. I'd say probably 50% or more of the Indian population, their per capita income is probably something like $500 a year. And this includes lease money, odd jobs, rations, and commodities, and other things that the tribe gives out to them. And of course, these commodities are quite a hammer over their head too. You know, if a community doesn't do what the controlling tribal officials want them to do, as far as elections and other things are concerned, they just don't get as many commodities or any at all.
Oh, really?
This is used.
Do Indians live at all off the land?
Hardly at all. Hardly at all.
One of the big things that they liked to do in the 30s was this kind of artsy-craftsy bit, you know, of reviving that, which in an aesthetic sense is kind of nice, but...
That could be a multi-million dollar business today if they'd have let the Indians do that back in the 30s, but the Bureau spiked that whole thing. They wouldn't let the Indians, they wouldn't encourage it, they wouldn't allow them to get into this field and to develop it properly.
I think it...
there's a worldwide market for this stuff.
Could be economically feasible.
Oh, yes. But it would take tremendous amounts of money to set it up.
Well, they do some of it, like they have an arts and crafts center at Grove
Park. Of course, along with your setting up the plant to manufacture this stuff, as you know, there'd have to be a tremendous organization that could get these goods to the consumer and salesmen to go and sell the stuff and to establish the markets, which are just waiting to be established in Europe and all over this country and all over the world, really. This stuff has a great deal of appeal to people.
Japan
is making a lot of money making ersatz Indian beadwork and stuff themselves. I'll bet you they're out producing the Indian 50 to 1.
Well, I would imagine.
Or 100 to 1, because they have the distribution system. They're able to get this to the market and to the consumer.
Japanese stuff sold right on the reservation.
Sure. We passed a law here in South Dakota making it a crime to label Indian craft work as anything other than, I mean, as Indian if it isn't in fact Indian. I forget just what the wording of the law is, but we got that through the State Indian Commission.
Do you think that there's, you always hear of the drunken Indian, is alcohol a considerable problem?
It is a terrible problem. It's probably the curse of the Indian people.
Why should it be?
Well, I think this. He has led such a clustered, coddled existence. He is not allowed in many areas to have command of his destiny, even as far as his home is concerned, that as soon as he gets a few drinks in him, he goes hog wild. Just the opposite reaction. Beforehand, being very quiet and non-assertive, and once he gets some drinks in him, he's out to lash out against this thing that puts him in an unhappy existence, an unhappy state of existence.
I've heard some people say that one of the problems with Indian life is that it lacks a father image, that the father should really be the center of the family and looked up to, and the Indian father lacking employment can't project that image.
Of course.
Affects the children.
The father image was destroyed by the Indian Reorganization Act. I really feel this. Then you had the emergence of the mother being really the cohesive force that held the family together. Well, since the repeal of the Indian liquor law and the women have started drinking, there's absolute chaos in many Indian families because there's no one to hold the family together and bring these kids up like they should be brought up. And the only thing that's going to do it is to restore some pride and respect to that man, and so that it gets mainly down to an economic problem.
I think the problem is essentially economic.
Economic, sure it is.
What do you think of this industry that they're starting to
bring
in small amounts?
These things are all right. They're a step in the right direction, but it's the same old situation. Too little and too late or not enough. What we need is a task force sanctioned by Congress and financed by Congress of Indians to travel all over this country and come up with recommendations for a complete overhaul of this entire Indian situation with a view toward promoting the Indian people so that they actually handle their own affairs. I'm not interested that they don't make mistakes. I'm not interested that they be a success. I am interested in them doing the independent thinking, because this will eventually solve his problems. Same as it does for you or any other white man in this great country. We've got a wonderful country. The Indian has many opportunities available to him, but he has been deterred by the very existence of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
And would you abolish the Bureau?
Absolutely. Unless it's run by Indians.
I've had some Indians tell me that they thought that, you know, under the Indian Reorganization Act, they provided that qualified Indians would have an advantage in getting jobs in the Bureau.
Well, I tell
you. They thought it was better when they just had white men, because the Indians discriminated against other Indians.
Well, you know,
white men.
Well, you know what they've done. See, the Indian Reorganization Act, I believe, provided for Indian preference. Period. But what the Bureau did, now this is an outright case of discrimination on the Bureau. They interpreted this to mean only initial employment. It didn't apply, according to them, to advancement and promotion. And they've effectively kept the Indian out of policy-making decisions in the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Indians only hold the clerical job. They might become a superintendent someday, but you know how hamstrung a superintendent is. He can't do anything but that a regulation is there for him to do it, and he's completely under the control of the policymaker.